At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Save big money on your roofing project at Menards with Owens Corning Shingles. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements and enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning Duration Shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 24 colors of Owens Corning Duration Shingles and transform your home today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Rex Huerman.
What we're about to get into and what you're about to witness is one of the most psychologically complex and disturbing pieces of footage to emerge from any true crime documentary in recent memory. I got to sit down with psychotherapist Siobhan Scott to analyze clips from the Peacock documentary, The Gilgo Beach Killer, House of Secrets. That sounds a little too happy now, didn't it? And I got to warn you, what we've discovered about Asa Elrip, Rex Huerman's wife, might challenge your understanding of denial, trauma bonding, and how predators select their partners. Before we dive in, let me set the stage with some context that we don't cover in the conversation with Siobhan. This documentary was filmed months after Rex Huerman's arrest in July of 2023, at a time when the evidence against him was already overwhelming. We're talking about DNA evidence linking him to six of the seven victims, a murder planning document created in 2000 that's HK-2002-04. Containing detailed instructions for killing and body disposal, trophy newspaper clippings spanning three decades, cell phone tower records showing their burner phone activity correlating with victims' disappearances. And here's what makes this even more extraordinary. By the time Asa Elrip agreed to participate in this documentary, reportedly for $1 million, prosecutors had already revealed that every single murder Rex is charged with occurred when she and the children were out of town. I mean, think about that. She's the one who took these trips to Iceland. She's the one who left him alone in that house over and over again over 30 years. Now, most of us would look at that pattern and kind of feel sick. We'd question every trip, every absence, every time he encouraged us to visit family. But Asa, she appears in this documentary not as a woman grappling with the possibility that she enabled a serial killer or just was completely oblivious to it, but as a devoted wife, still madly in love with her hero, she calls him. What Siobhan Scott and I discovered in analyzing this footage goes far beyond simple denial. We're looking at something psychologists rarely get to see and so clearly displayed as a trauma bond so powerful it's created an alternate reality. Asa isn't just standing by her man, she's living in a completely different universe from the rest of us, including her own daughter, Victoria, who by this point has already told documentary makers she believes her father is most likely guilty. The footage you're about to see was filmed in their Massapequa Park home, the same home, where investigators spent 12 days searching for evidence. The basement Asa walks through so casually. That's where prosecutors believe some of the women may have died. The walls torn apart. They were looking for trophies, the DNA, for any trace of seven women Rex is accused of killing. But here's what struck both Siobhan and me. Asa doesn't see a crime here. She doesn't see a house of horrors. She sees her home, violated by police, with her hero unjustly imprisoned. And the way she expresses this, with that weird smile, that light in her eyes, when she talks about Rex, it's not just denial. It looks like worship. I need to warn you that what we're about to hear might be triggering for anyone who's been in a relationship with someone who led a double life, because what Siobhan identifies in this footage is a masterclass in how predators don't just hunt their victims. They carefully select and groom their enablers. And in Asa Elrup, Rex Heuermann may have found the perfect mark. A vulnerable 18-year-old girl who would spend the next 27 years seeing him not as who he was, but as a hero she desperately needed him to be. So let's dive in. This is my conversation with psychotherapist Siobhan Scott, analyzing what might be the most disturbing portrait of denial ever captured, maybe on film.
I felt like it answered so many questions for me, and not that I can say definitively, you know, without meeting her, this is a diagnosis or whatever, but there's a lot wrong with this lady. Yeah. And in a way, it's creepy, it's kind of pathetic and heartbreaking, and I found it really enlightening.
It certainly was a side I did not expect to see. I didn't know what to expect when we saw it, but this was unlike, I think, most other murder docs that go in and talk to the spouse and the reaction that we've gotten from them. This is, it's an expert masterclass in cognitive dissonance or something far greater than that, I think. Mm-hmm. Let's start by taking a look at how she talks about how she met Rex in one of the more disturbing clips of all of this, because her adoration for Rex is still very much there. Let's take a look at this clip, and we'll talk on the other side. This is from the
I moved dog. Here in with Rex in November of 1995. Oh, that's my favorite. I met Rex when I was 18 years old. He was going to college. I was working at 7-Eleven. I was born in Iceland. My younger brother was adopted to an Icelandic family, and I was adopted to America. But because of that, I traveled a lot to Iceland with my family and Rex. He traveled a lot. He went on archaeological digs. He's the kind of guy, you turn your head and you go take a look at, you know? He was tall, handsome, debonair young man. I love tall, dark, and handsome. That's me. And at that time, I was madly in love with the man. There's no doubt about that. But then I met my first husband and got married. But things did not go well at all. After my son Christopher was born, my ex-husband became somebody completely different. I was in the process of getting a divorce. Christopher's father, he wasn't very nice about it. He said to me, there's no way in the world he was going to be okay with me being happy with somebody else. Rex was the kind of person that you could call, even if you just wanted to talk, and that's it. We were friends. Everybody needs a friend. So Rex came with me one time to go pick up my son. Rex was standing there, and he heard what he said. Rex then says, okay, I'm not worried. Let's get a lawyer. Let's take him to court. And then he paid for the lawyer to take him to court. So fast forward, I got my divorce. There was no reason to hold back, you know what I mean? So Rex said to me, I've got a nice house. I mean, it's not big, not elaborate. How about you come and see if you'd like to stay there? I'm like, yes, I would love to. And then I found out I was pregnant with Rex's baby. And he said to me, well, how do you feel about marrying me? And I said, yes. There's a picture of me, and I'm looking up going, I finally got him. He's mine.
And what a prize.
What a prize.
What a prize you got there in Rex Heuermann. Let's break that down a little bit. Obviously, she was very much in distress. She was in a bad place. Rex swoops in. What was happening there?
Here was the hero. Here was the rescuer. Tall, dark, debonair, handsome. She was madly in love with him. And he was her knight in shining armor. And this is a woman. She had a difficult background, sounds like. Mm-hmm. And for her, she was desperate for someone to rescue her. And who knows the full story on the first man she married, but I'm guessing there was something similar. It was a rescue situation that went bad. And here comes Rex. And, you know, he obviously had reasons for choosing a submissive, dependent woman. And she still lights up when she talks about him. Her smile when she talks about him, it's eerie.
Yeah, I think that's putting it lightly, that it's eerie. Everyone needs a friend. That I also found. Everyone needs a... Now, I don't know how chopped up this is either, because, I mean, it could have been... You could have literally had a producer that says, say, everybody needs a friend really creepily. Okay, do that right now, Asa. Everybody needs a friend. And then splice, there it is. I don't know. I don't know how this was all done. But she does come across rather interesting and still very non-accepting, I think, of what actually went down. We're going to hear from some of the kids in just a little bit as well. They have a very different opinion, at least the daughter does. But let's take another look. Let's keep seeing what Asa is apparently seeing in Rex. This is a clip. The daughter's in it, and it's a look at what life is like a little bit in the home now that Rex is gone. Let's see.
When we got back home, after they raided it, it was not recognizable. No beds, no clothes. Our bathroom sink was broken. They should have actually deemed our house uninhabitable.
Oh, look at this.
It was as if they were trying to leave us for dead.
They broke that,
didn't
they?
They just pulled us out of the wall.
They pulled it out of the wall. I think that's what that hole in the wall was from.
What is in here?
Garbage, nothing.
Well, something was in here because it's not in here now.
The kids, they were crying themselves to sleep before we actually got into the house. We were all doing it. Fear, anxiety, guilt, all of those emotions are all going like a roller coaster, rolling, rolling, and rolling, and rolling. But we needed to come home. They had a lot of sentimental stuff in the house. And I still feel Rex is here.
I still feel Rex is here.
Sounds almost like God, right? I feel God's presence. I feel Rex is here. Talk about holding him in this elevated status.
I mean, he's not dead. He's in prison. His spirit isn't like translating itself to the Heuermann house while they are there.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it does seem that she holds him in a very, very high regard. Almost godlike. Let's talk about
godlike.
That for a little bit. Obviously, he did come in. He did save her. How much of that relationship do you think it was at the beginning where Rex was just, I guess, being the savior. Maybe that was his plight in life. Maybe this is the type of guy that he is, and that's what he's drawn to, is helping people and saving people. Do you think all the way back then when he did the whole, well, let's get the divorce from this guy, I'll pay for it, come live it with me, take care of your kids and your family, and we'll have a family while I on the weekend go and kill sex workers. Do you think that's how it was planned at the beginning, or do you think it's just like, it opened itself up to that opportunity once he kind of saw how everything fell?
I believe, going back on the timeline of the murders, that he had actually killed someone before they got married, the 1993 case.
Yeah, yeah.
So my guess is he was looking for a woman that he could control. And for whatever reason, he wanted to give this presentation. You know, she kept saying, but he's a family man. How could he have done this? He's a family man. He wanted to give this presentation that he was a family man. And she was an easy mark in that way. She was vulnerable. I don't know that she's very, well, we can say safely, she's not insightful. Mm-hmm. And it gave him a sense of power to come in and rescue in this way. My guess is he doesn't do this normally for most people, but he had an agenda here.
I need to sit with what we just heard for a moment, and I imagine you may do too. Siobhan Scott's analysis reveals something profoundly disturbing, not just about Rex Human, but about how predators operate in plain sight for decades. But there's so much more to the story that we didn't even touch on in that segment. Let me share some details that make this even more chilling. The timeline Siobhan mentioned, Rex had allegedly killed Sandra Costella in 1993 before he married Asa in 1996. But here's what we know now. Prosecutors believe he didn't stop during their marriage. He allegedly killed Jessica Taylor in 03, Valerie Mack in 2000, and Gilgo Four between 07 and 10. All while playing devoted father and husband. And the control Siobhan identified, it goes even deeper. Court documents reveal that Rex monitored the family's devices, installed security cameras throughout the house, and maintained strict control over finances. Asa couldn't even access their bank accounts without him. When police arrested Rex, she had no money, no access to funds, and no idea how to pay bills. After 27 years of marriage, but perhaps the most tragic element we didn't discuss, is what this has done to the children. Victoria Huerman, who lost her job at her father's architecture firm, has undergone a complete transformation. She went from defending her father to creating disturbing artwork that seems to process her trauma, paintings that her father's former friend described as showing another side of Rex. Meanwhile, Christopher, who has developmental disabilities, was described by attorneys as extraordinarily shocked and traumatized, unable to process how the man who raised him could be accused of such horrors. I mean, can you imagine your dad? You saw him one way your whole life, and then this is who he actually was all that time? The financial element is also worth examining here. Asa is battling cancer without health insurance. The family home was destroyed during searches, with repair estimates in the hundreds of thousands. So they fled to South Carolina trying to start over. Yet Asa took money, reportedly $1 million, to appear in this documentary while victims' families struggle with funeral costs, trauma therapy, and everything that goes along with that. What does that tell us about her state of mind? There's also the matter of missed opportunities. Neighbors had called Rex creepy for years. One woman said she would cross the street to avoid him. His own friend noticed disturbing behavior. An escort who met him in 2015 was so unsettled by his obsession with the Gilgo Beach murders that she left and lived. Yet Asa saw none of this, or chose not to see it. Siobhan's point about Rex wanting to present as a family man is crucial when you consider the planning documents prosecutors found. It included notes about avoiding detection, about creating alibis, about maintaining a normal appearance. Was his marriage to Asa part of that plan? Was she chosen specifically because she would never question, never suspect, and never see? As this case moves closer to trial, DNA hearings began in March of 25. Asa continues to visit Rex in jail. Still maintains his innocence. She calls him her hero. And perhaps most disturbingly, she's not alone. There's a whole community of women who write to accused killers, who marry them in prison, who convince themselves that everyone else is wrong. Javon's helped us to understand that this isn't just about one woman's denial. It's about how predators identify and exploit vulnerability. It's about how trauma bonds can override every piece of evidence, every red flag, every warning sign. It's about how someone can share a bed with an alleged serial killer for 27 years and genuinely believe they're sleeping next to a hero. For you guys, especially our women in our audience, who might recognize some of these patterns in their own relationships, I want to be clear. Trusting your instincts isn't paranoia. If something feels wrong, it might be. And if you find yourself making excuses for behavior that others find concerning, if you're isolated from support systems, if you're financially dependent with no access to resources, those aren't signs of love. They're signs of control. The Gilgo Beach case will continue to unfold, but this documentary has already provided something invaluable, a window into the psychology of denial so profound it borders on delusion. Asa Alrup may never accept what has happened, what her husband is accused of. She may go to her grave believing Rex Heuermann was her hero. And for the rest of us, her story serves as a warning. Sometimes the most dangerous lies are the ones we tell ourselves. If you found this interesting, please let us know in the comments. Let us know your thoughts on this case and press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our coverage of this case and the many others we cover here at True Crime Today. There's a lot of them. So hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this and on YouTube as well. I want to hear from you in the comments. And also, please do press subscribe so you don't miss that coverage. My name is Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Craving non-stop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's. Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's. Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.